when the Democrats sounded like a Republican.
When I ran for president 4 years ago, I pledged to end welfare as we know it. I have worked very hard for 4 years to do just that. Today, the Congress will vote on legislation that gives us a chance to live up to that promise.
20 years ago, President Bill Clinton announced the beginning of a new era in the way the U.S. administers welfare assistance to the poor. At the time the welfare-to-work legislation was passing the House, more than 13 million people received cash assistance from the government. Today, just 3 million do. Under the law, welfare recipients had to start working after 2 years of benefits. It also placed a 5-year limit on those benefits. For those receiving welfare checks, the monthly assistance isn't enough. They have to work to pay the bills.
Chopping cotton, picking cotton, pulling corn.
Most of my job experience is call centers.
Mostly retail jobs.
Taking care of a couple of older people. I go and do their housework and stay with them as company.
Those voices are part of a podcast called The Uncertain Hour, produced by Marketplace. This season, they're taking a look at 20 years of welfare reform. Chrissy Clark is senior correspondent for Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk.
In my reporting in Wealth and Poverty, I often would hear people talking about welfare, complaining about it, talking about how much money we spend on it or all the lazy people who are on it. You hear these sort of these tropes. And I started to wonder, how does welfare work these days anyways? Because I knew that 20 years ago, we reformed it and really kind of overhauled the system. And the more I dug into how the system really works now, who's on it, how much we spend on it, it was like, oh, people have no idea how this system works. We have very old-fashioned ideas about what we're talking about.
Well, one thing that's clear is that the people on welfare absolutely love it, and it's kind of like an easy street situation. Listen.
I hated welfare, to be fair with you. I really hated it. You're talked down to, and you really are completely always stressed out.
So that is Ruby Duncan, who is now 83 years old. She lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. And she was on welfare back in the 60s and 70s after she was injured on the job. And she ended up sort of becoming this unlikely activist in what is called the welfare rights movement. There was a time when welfare had a lot of discriminatory practices sort of built into the system. And Ruby Duncan started to realize this. She was at a grocery store one day and she was asking other women who were on welfare, how much in benefits do you get? And she started to see this pattern that white women got more benefits, a larger welfare check than black women did. And this was not an isolated incident. The more she looked into it, the more she discovered this was really built into a lot of policies in welfare offices. There were protests across the country in the late 60s and early 70s demanding more equity in the way welfare was distributed.
And what you see in the welfare system is an attempt to engineer social choices on the part of welfare recipients. But as you could see with Ruby Duncan, it also ends up reflecting some uncharitable impulses within society itself, in that case, racial discrimination. Here's, though, Josephine Moore, another character who you profile, who describes in some detail just how intrusive the welfare system was in her case.
It's just one more thing we had to do. If the daytime hours is stuck up with you doing the volunteer stuff, when are you going to go find jobs, though?
She was receiving welfare at this sort of pivotal moment in history, right when the system was changing in the mid-90s, as it was going from an entitlement, a program that, you know, if you made under a certain income and you met certain technical requirements, if you were a parent in a family, a poor family, you automatically received welfare benefits. You automatically received a check. There are also these other factors. So even in a place like West Virginia, where Josephine Moore lived, there are just not a lot of jobs to go around. So in order to qualify for welfare, if you can't get a paying job, you would have to be involved in some kind of work activity. And this is still the case. So you would volunteer instead. It may be a well-intentioned system, but what it means is that Josephine was volunteering for 20 to 30 hours during the day in order to get her very small welfare check, which meant that she couldn't actually look for a real paying job. So you get kind of stuck in this double bind where you maybe want to get ahead, you want to get into the workforce, but you have so much paperwork and so many requirements that you can't.
Here's Josephine Moore's daughter describing how she actually was able to get out of the welfare system and find a job and what that feels like.
It was worth it because you was working and you was earning your money, and it felt good to getting that paycheck and being able to cash it and going out and spending your money and knowing you had it.
I've done that a lot. That's true.
You had it and it was yours. It felt good.
What kind of a job is she talking about there?
She was working on an assembly line in a chicken plant, a Tyson chicken plant in North Carolina, where she had moved for a little while. And this is smelly, hard work. It can be dangerous. She actually lost a thumb on the assembly line when she was cleaning some of the equipment. But even sort of given those challenges and those sorts of costs, she still was so happy. She was so glad to be in kind of the regular workforce, to be earning her own paycheck, to not have that stigma on her that often welfare recipients feel. One of the stark facts now is that we have this safety net, this cash assistance, this welfare. Very few poor families in America actually take part in the system. Out of every 100 families that lives below the poverty line in the U.S., less than 3 of them actually receive cash assistance, what we call welfare. This safety net that we still think of as such a part of our country, a lot of people are slipping through the cracks.
Chrissy Clark, senior correspondent for Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.